What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 12 of Sports from the Six. A little early week action and addition here for you this week, alongside my co-host Dwayne Turner, Flip Livingstone, and the always enchanting in the background, Stacy Deshaun. What's going on, guys?
What's up, AK?
How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Good. Just, you know, catching up on sports this weekend. We're pretty knee deep now into round two of the NBA playoffs. I gotta say, it's been a lot more exciting than the first round.
I agree wholeheartedly. What do you think, Flip?
I think, you know, part of the thing we always talk about on the show is how we're always excited to watch the games that we talk about, and how truly this is an exciting time of year, and it just continues. We just continue to be proven right with that.
The last few days have been absolutely remarkable. We've seen three game winners in 3 days, guys.
Buzzer beaters.
Yeah, buzzer beaters by some of the game's biggest stars and even past stars, like Paul Pierce. What have you liked?
Oh, God.
Yeah, Flip. I'm seeing that's drawing.
You know what, guys? Like, there's not
it's
enough.
Your nemesis.
There's not enough Kleenex in the world to dry my tears that Paul Pierce has made me cry. Honestly, I don't know what it is with this guy. The fact I think that I brought it up on the show, he listened and was just like, you know what? Screw these Sports from the Six guys and screw Toronto. I'm just going to play amazing.
No, I didn't say anything.
So. I know. It was my fault. I'm taking the blame right now. So that's my bad,
sure,
Toronto.
He posted a new Instagram pic where he's sitting in the Centennial booth and he's like King of the North.
You know what? As much as we hate on this guy, let's take this few seconds. We'll keep it short and sweet with Paul Pierce to give him a little bit of credit, because not only does he talk the smack, he backs it up, which is something in this day and age that does not happen a lot. You have a lot of trash talkers, a lot of guys that flap their gums, and then when it comes to crunch time, they're nowhere. And this guy, at crunch time, is putting the ball in the bucket when it counts the most, and I got to give him some credit because, like, even just the quote, I know we want to talk about the quote after the last game, his cockiness and swagger is just through the roof.
I mean, to me, that's probably the quote. I mean, it's definitely the quote of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It might be one of the quotes of the year. I mean, the funny thing is, Chris Broussard, he had another question lined up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how do you follow that up,
you
right?
Don't.
So that's why Paul Pierce ended up leaving. But it was an incredible game. I mean, Washington almost blew the game. They had, I think it was a 21-point lead.
Yep, in the fourth quarter.
Right, yeah, they almost blew it.
Exactly. And Atlanta, they made a furious comeback to get it close and tie it up. But incredible buzzer beater by Paul Pierce. And this is all being done without John Wall, who, correct me if I'm wrong, he has five
non-displaced fractures.
Exactly, yeah. in that left wrist. So who knows if he ends up coming back. Obviously, they're up 2-1 right now, and, you know, they can probably, well, I mean, I shouldn't say that because, I mean, who knows what any game means right now. But
especially against a 60-win team like Atlanta.
Exactly.
Especially with seeing how many close games we've had just in the past couple days.
There you go. So, I mean, obviously they'd love to have him back. He's their best player. So I can't wait for the next game.
Hubie Brown said it best on Open Gym, and he talked about your rotation players in the playoffs. In the regular season, you may see them playing 30 to 34 minutes, whereas in the playoffs, you're going to see them play 38 to 42.
Right.
Washington has done that with their star guys. They've used their guys. Paul Pierce had that rest in the season. They are starting to utilize Nene and Gortat even more. And Otto Porter's emergence, it's not just been a one-round flash in the pan. The guy has been big time money for that team.
Yeah, he's shown up for sure. And I don't know if you guys know exactly his draft rank position, but I know he was a top draft pick. I think he went in the top 10, I want to say
top 5.
Yeah, and he fizzled out a bit, but the fact that he's playing now is, you know, he's earning that draft rank that he got drafted at, because without John Wall, this team is in a position where they're really going to need those players like Otto Porter to play out of his head. You know, it's just been announced that Wall's unlikely to play in Game 4. They're going to need an equally magical performance from Paul Pierce and the supporting cast like Nene and these other guys, because I'll tell you, that Atlanta team is hungry. And as much as that was a Cinderella story, I still like their chances, especially without John Wall.
People forget, this guy, Otto Porter, is a third overall pick.
Wow.
He's not some scrub. He comes from a good system, and he's equally as part of this young core, I feel, especially now after this playoff performance going forward. And he's a guy that they like, that wingspan, that 7-1 wingspan. You can use him on anyone. There were times he was checking Schroeder and Teague. which, I mean, those are point guards, the quickest in the league, two of the quickest guys in the league, and the mismatches that he creates, it's a huge, huge advantage in the playoffs.
I mean, you saw he frustrated DeRozan in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, with that wingspan, I mean, he's a very great defensive, great two-way player because you've seen him knock down some huge threes, both in the Raptors series and in this series going forward. So, yeah, I mean, his emergence in the playoffs has been great for them. And like you brought up, Ali, I mean, to have these role players step up now, especially with the John Wall injury, it's going to pay dividends down the line.
Now, that, in my opinion, that's what championship teams do. They elevate their game when you least expect it, like a guy like Porter. So do I think Washington has what it takes to go past this round even? I don't. But that being said, these are the types of players and types of play that you need from your team to step up in the clutch. So speaking of clutch shots, you know, that Cleveland series, come on, guys. We've seen a couple of clutch shots there.
Back to back. Unbelievable.
And it's amazing because, I mean, that's the place where Jordan was built. So the storylines around that Derrick Rose,
house,
you know.
The that Jordan Man. Built.
The local boy first.
Yep.
Calling glass, hitting the jumper, and then LeBron coming back. After an abysmal shooting game. Oof. And just, of course, magical players make magical moments happen, right?
And that was sans headband. just to put that out there. No headband? Does it mean anything?
Oh, man. I don't want to give any value to that anymore. But so game three, obviously, the first one where it was Derrick Rose and the game was tied up, and I believe the ball was supposed to go to Jimmy Butler. The play was set up for Jimmy Butler.
Right.
And he couldn't get through because LeBron was playing such great defense on him. So Rose ended up deciding to come to the ball as quickly as he could because he only had 3 seconds left. So he ends up, you know, taking the ball and moving to the – ended up fading to the right, I believe. And not to mention, Taj Gibson set a great screen to be able to get him free. So it was a fadeaway shot. He banks it in, and – We brought it up before. It's stories like that you just love to see. I mean, this is Derrick Rose's second playoff series being able to play in about 3 years because of the amount of injuries he's suffered.
Yeah.
And Ali's brought it up. He's the local Chicago boy, too. So to see Derrick Rose be able to put the team on his back, he was incredible that game. I mean, he didn't shoot incredible on – I mean, I think he was like 10 for 26. So the shooting performance wasn't great, but – He,
I know what you're getting at there, Dwayne, though.
He stepped up there.
With D-Rose playing good in Chicago after so many devastating injuries, you know, that's just good to see from a general sports fan's perspective, especially because D-Rose is one of the elite players in this league. You want to see your elite players performing. You want them on the court, not off the court. So as much as I do want the Bulls to lose the series for different reasons.
We know what the reasons are.
We don't need to talk about the reasons. Anyway. You know, LeBron, this is an exciting series. We talked about exciting. This is awesome series, and I'm intrigued to see how it unfolds. Both teams missing key players.
Yes.
We talked about it before the show. Kevin Love being out for Cleveland, obviously, and now Pau Gasol being out for Chicago. Two big white guys that mean a lot to their team. So we'll see what happens.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, and Flip. We've seen, really, these guys step up in the playoffs. In Chicago and Cleveland, we've really seen what we've wanted to see. The stars that have played have stepped up in the big moments. This is what the playoffs are about. And obviously, we know this could be, well, it is the series of the East. And we heard the comments that LeBron made, taking a very mature tone to Kyrie Irving getting ripped by the media for not having any assists after game three. And you could see the camera pans to Kyrie. They asked if Kyrie gets a pass for having no assists. Kyrie's there.
Shakes his head.
He's shaking his head like, man, come on. After game three of the playoffs, this is the topic we're going with?
And it's, not to mention, I mean, they lost on a buzzer beater shot. It's not as if they were blown out. So, I just wanted to add that there.
Yeah, and I mean, LeBron understands. If there are championship aspirations here, they need to be on the same page, and this is not the point in the season where even if Kyrie does have a bad game, it's going to happen. This is still a young player going through a development curve in what is the toughest series of his life right now, the toughest basketball atmosphere of his life.
And I think you touch on a good point there. What needs to be mentioned with this team is there's so many new moving parts to it. Yeah, LeBron's coming home, but this is still a new team for him. This is his first season playing with Kyrie. This is the first season for all these new guys they brought in, Mozgov and J.R. Smith. Even young guys like Tristan Thompson, they haven't played together. So, you know, we talked about before teams needing to come together in the playoffs and really play as a cohesive unit. And I think that's where the Cavaliers are going to struggle the most, especially now missing Love, is to play as a team. And that's where I think Chicago can really get past them, is playing as a unit. So who wins the series? I don't know what you guys still think. I personally think the Cavs will pull it out, but who knows?
I mean, to be honest, I think losing that game four, I mean, that was crucial. I think they had to take advantage of that game just because Cleveland...
You mean the Bulls, right?
Yeah, the Bulls. They had to take advantage of that game because the problem is now momentum goes back with the Cavaliers as they head back to Cleveland. And the reason why they had to take advantage of that game is that Kyrie, he was hobbled. I believe it's a right foot he's struggling with right now. You saw Dellavedova had to play some crunch minutes at the end there.
Right.
Iman Shumpert looks like he's hobbled. There was points where J.R. Smith looked like he was hurt. So, I mean, it's just those things. You have to take advantage of a team when they're down.
Right.
And now that you give them back momentum, you give them back home court advantage. I mean, it's a best of three series now, and two of those games are going to be in Cleveland. We've seen Chicago already take one from them, so it's absolutely impossible that it's very possible that they can do the same thing again, but they have to play better.
Speaking of this from a Chicago standpoint, we've heard a lot about the friction throughout the year. A guy like Tom Thibodeau, maybe returning, maybe not returning.
Yep.
How he plays his starters big minutes. Jimmy Butler, almost 40 minutes a game. The guy is really grinding. Today,
it's a lot
news
of
came
minutes.
Out.
It's a lot of minutes.
A lot of minutes. And just now, news coming out that the Lakers are actually planning on offering a max contract to Jimmy Butler. I don't know. Where do you guys see this series, really? I think that this series could have a long impact on the potential structure of Chicago, not only from a coaching perspective, but from a roster personnel perspective. They're so close to doing something great. That one obstacle that stands in their way is LeBron James.
Okay, so if that's the case, then if they, you know, they lose this series, let's say they even lose the next two games and they go out 4-2, do they make a roster move like letting Butler go? Is that what you think the answer is? Or are they this close to something great, like you said, so you stick with the unit that you have?
I've already heard that, I mean, in regards to Tom Thibodeau, I've already heard that whether he wins a championship or not, I mean, he could be out.
Right.
That's how much friction there is right now with him in the front office, and that would be too bad. I mean, just to relate it to something else, I know Jim Harbaugh for the San Francisco 49ers, to bring up football.
Little football reference.
I mean, he went to three straight NFC Championship games, and for whatever reason, he had a bit of a down year. He finished 500, and they kicked him out the door.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we brought it up before. I mean, it's what have you done for me lately?
Of course, yeah. We're seeing that more and more.
Well, with Tom, I just don't see how you let somebody like him go. And in regards to Jimmy Butler, I don't know off the top of my head, but I believe the Chicago Bulls might be strapped in terms of salary cap, so that might be a problem for them and be able to retain Jimmy Butler.
How much did you say LA is going to offer?
A max contract. The one good part about
max
that is
contract.
Is that
this guy's had one good year.
Jimmy's an RFA, so they have the chance to match the bird rights, and they're okay going over the cap on him. But I look at it, Dwayne, and I'm like, okay, what was Jimmy Butler without Tom Thibodeau? I mean, obviously he spent his time in the league under him, but this guy has shown a knack for really working young players in at the right time.
That's right.
We've seen it with Butler. We've seen it a little bit with Snell this year.
Oh, yeah.
Mirotić is not a young guy, but he's picked his spots. He's put him in spaces where he can really succeed in the rotation. And that's something that's been an underrated aspect of Thibodeau that you don't know if you're going to get from another coach.
It's a great point, AK. It's a very good point. And absolutely. I think what's interesting there is that's something I feel like a classic Laker move. And I don't know. You guys know Butler's history a little bit better, but from an average NBA fan, this was his big outcoming year, right? This is the year he's put up solid numbers. He's played more minutes than he ever has. So I think from the Lakers' perspective, it's a classic Laker move. Throw a bunch of money at a guy who doesn't really have a proven track record, especially when you just said his relation to Coach Thibodeau. Do you really want to pull a guy away from a coach where he's had so much success? I don't know if that's the right answer, and who knows what that means for Chicago down the line, but that's a lot of money, and I think Dwayne's right. I don't see them matching a max deal. That's a lot of money to throw at Butler.
And, you know, sorry to interrupt you there, buddy, but, like, in terms of Jimmy Butler, I mean, it would be difficult for them to retain him, but at the same time, I mean, he provides a lot of value. In terms, right now in the league, having a wing player like of his caliber is so, so crucial to the success of a lot of these teams.
For sure.
And he's one of the best two-way players. He was announced as the most improved player of the year. And I believe he went from about 13 points a game to 20 points per game. He's a guy who can create his own shot. We see the defense he's been playing on LeBron, sometimes by himself. So, yes, Thibodeau's had a huge impact on his game, and he deserves a lot of the credit. But, I mean, there are a lot of teams that would love to have Jimmy Butler on that.
Yeah, this is a guy that's got better every single year in the league. His three-point percentage was abysmal. It was very – I mean, we talk about DeRozan improving things every single year. Jimmy Butler's been in the same boat. He had an 18% three-point percentage in his first year.
Wow.
And he's upped that now to a very respectable 38%.
Oh, that's huge.
Obviously, we talked about the points per game increasing. He's become a better rebounder. He's become better distributor. His all-around game has improved to the point where a max contract is really not out of the question.
No.
At the same time, if you're a Butler, we've seen so many players leave situations that are so favorable for their careers that this is a place where you're growing, you're succeeding. Yes, Derrick Rose is injured, but you have a chance to play with one of the best point guards in the NBA, an MVP candidate, and you can try your hardest to lobby for a coach who's really given you the chance to succeed.
I agree. I agree 100%.
I think the tough part is here, and I feel like we should probably move on to the West and talk a little Western Conference,
sure.
But before we jump off Butler, it's so hard for a young player like that. You know, we've said how he's, you know, kind of unestablished in the league to turn down a max deal. You don't know what's going to happen. Who knows if it, you know, he's upped his total points per game by 7 points. Who knows if that drops back to 13 points a game. And injuries, you know, there's so many variables in this league that if he is offered a max deal, I really don't see him turning it down. It's just, you know, it's such a bold move. Anything can happen. So.
And will Chicago match it?
Chicago match it? So who knows? But that's a lot of money. It's an interesting kind of side note to the series, what will happen after the series is done. But, you know, that's a lot of money regardless.
So how about that free throw fest
down
in L.A.? We're seeing DeAndre Jordan practicing.
Let's talk about it. The hack-a-shack mentality.
It was funny. I was actually just talking to one of our good buddies, Dan, in our program. And, you know, obviously these are professional basketball players.
Wait, do you mean Dan Goffenberg?
Oh, Dan Russell.
Dan Russell. Shout out Goffenberg one time.
DG.
So we were talking, and it's just the amount of times he's been subjected to all these hack-a-shack or hack-a...
Whatever
you want to call it now. You would think that all this practice he's getting at the free throw line would have been paying off, but it clearly isn't. And I mean, I get it. It's a strategy that's, you know, coaches are using because it's a rule that's in the game right now. But it ruins the game. I mean, it's not a fun game to have to watch.
You're like watching 3 hours of just walking to the line.
It slows the game down.
I mean, Houston was up 22 points. Or sorry, no, the LA Clippers were up 22 points last night, and they were still, you know, hacking Jordan.
Right, and we should offer a little context to the listeners here. DeAndre Jordan on the LA Clippers went to the line how many times before the half?
28 times.
28 free throw attempts by the half, which is, you said it's a record.
It's an NBA record.
So I get, and I'm glad we brought right into this because that definitely slows the game down. That's boring. It's ridiculous that you can rotate in guys just to foul a guy. I think that's ridiculous. But at the same time, if this guy can't hit free throws and you're a professional NBA player, like, you know, there's something has to be done about it, because as much as it's brutal to watch, how can you have a guy on the court who can't hit free throws? You've even said it. He's getting more and more opportunities and he's shooting worse. It's ridiculous. It's ugly. Like, I used to watch basketball with a good friend of mine, Nick Murphy. His dad used to always say, if you can't hit free throws, you shouldn't be on the court.
Stacey's on her mini Fisher-Price net here in the studio, knocking him down as we speak.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like you don't have a guy standing in front of you, and you're missing open shots? This is ridiculous. You're a professional, man. Figure it out. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but it bothers me.
I don't know which person hates you more right now, DeAndre Jordan or Paul Pierce.
Well, you know what? Considering that I'll probably get beat up by both of them, bring them both on. Who cares?
I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, both teams are employing the same tactic. Because,
right.
I mean, when Howard when they have the chance to foul Howard and send him to the line, they're doing the same thing. And even Josh Smith at times.
Yeah, they're all terrible at shooting free throws.
It just screams laziness to me. And I get, you know, the coaches are watching them practice and they focus on specific things. Don't worry about your free throw shooting. In my opinion, that's craziness. Because because look at, like, yeah, the Clippers won handily, but imagine Jordan even hit 8 more free throws. You know, they would have won by another 10 to 12 points.
Well, how do you think Clint Capella feels? He's coming off the bench here. He knows his one job is to foul DeAndre Jordan.
But isn't that ridiculous? You know, we're rotating in guys just to foul someone. This is getting something, and Dwayne's right. Something needs to be, there needs to be a happy medium worked out. There needs to be something done where, I don't know what it is, and I'm sure we don't have enough time to talk about it on this show, but the fact that you have to see the same guy go to the line 30 times in the half and miss more than half of them is not only bad for the game, that's just bad for fans to watch.
You know what? I'm going to go into it, and I'm just going to say they need to just make it a limit. Like, you can foul, intentional foul someone so many times before, after 5 to 7, you can pick whoever you want. Because I don't know. I don't know. This is killing the game. This is killing the series.
I think, but yeah, it's killing the game, and it's killing the series. That, you know, you can argue to it, but I think what's, and I'll continue to say, what's more embarrassing is the man that he can't hit the shots.
See, that's my biggest thing.
That's exposing this league for what it is. You can make the league just because you're big and you can dunk.
Well, okay, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, DeAndre Jordan definitely provides a lot more value.
Of course, he's
a great defensive player.
He plays defense, I get it.
Yeah, and he's a great rebound. I mean, you're right, though. I mean, it's abysmal to have to keep watching this because, I mean, he's not getting any better.
He's getting worse.
I mean, that's the issue we have right now, right? So I don't know what can be done because Ali brings up the fact that let's make it a limit. Maybe you could up the time to when you can where you're not
can
allowed
I just
to
say
be
28 free throws a half.
This is what I'm saying.
For one person,
it's mind boggling. And for people who are listening that aren't NBA fans and who don't really, you know, it doesn't register for them what 28 free throw attempts in the half means.
They will not be a fan if they are watching that.
I don't know how to, you know, break it down. So it's how much does an average player, you know, maybe 6 to 8 trips in a half would
if
be
you're a
high
player,
number.
Player, you're,
I want to say 10.
You're going to get 10 a game?
Yeah,
like
10
Harden.
Yeah,
like if you're going to the half at the half 10 times to the stripe,
no, I'm saying
that would be high.
10 in total, right?
Yeah, 10 in total.
So there you go. So the man's going triple that in the half, and I don't even know what the number was on how many he hit, but I'm sure that's crazy. I could hit more than 10, and I'm terrible.
It was hilarious because, I mean, the halftime show with Ernie, Chuck, Shaq, and Kenny, they were having a heated discussion
about
it.
Yeah, they went in about it for sure.
And Kenny made it. It was hilarious because Kenny just comes off the desk, and he's just like, it's simple. he's there in his suit. All he does is with one hand and then with the basketball net right there and then just makes a free throw and then just walks away. It's that simple.
I'm telling you, Stacey is still knocking him down here.
And
boom.
Telling you, man. Those buckets.
Yeah, it's, you know what, like, look, let's not beat a dead dog here, but it overall, it's just, I think it's embarrassing for the NBA. And if I'm an athlete in the NBA, it's embarrassing for me to be DeAndre Jordan and to go to the line that many times and to know, he already knows in his head he's not going to hit even half the amount he's going to the line.
I just love the sarcastic jeers when he does make them. That's the funny thing.
I never thought I'd see a day when the series would become more about Austin Rivers and DeAndre Jordan missing free throws than anything else.
You know what,
Austin
deserves a lot of credit. I mean, people have been getting on him, but he's been huge for that bench, which has been lambasted all season.
Yeah, so I didn't think we'd be talking that, and I definitely didn't think we'd be talking Memphis up 2-1 in the other series because I think they need to be shown a little bit of love right now. That Memphis team is playing very well, playing solid team basketball. Up 2-1 in the series. What do you guys think about that? I know AK and I talked about this series a little bit. I said, you know, Memphis as a team in the Western Conference, you don't get this far in the Western Conference without being a good team. I think we all like Golden State to go to the final in the West. So for them to win already 2 out of 3 is definitely impressive.
Yeah, I look at this Golden State team, and now is what we're going to see. We're going to see them face real adversity. 2-1, tonight's game 4th. Memphis has a chance to really put the chokehold here on the series. It's near impossible in the Western Conference to come back from a 3-1 series deficit. And Mike Conley's been playing out of his mind since returning. Especially
the X factor, I think, so far.
Tony Allen, hey, Mr. First Team All Defense, running around here screaming that. It's really gotten, it seems like it's gotten to the psyche of the Golden State Warriors at this point.
That's a good point, man. And you know what? Where's Steph Curry been? You know, like, don't get me wrong, he's still playing good basketball, but not on
the
level.
See the picture of him, the milk carton, and they're like missing.
Yeah, he hasn't played Steph Curry basketball, and now look at the team is suffering. So he's going to need to figure it out pretty quick. The team is going to need to figure it out pretty quick because I'll tell you what, if you're going back to California down 3-1, That's done, in my opinion.
Again, though, some of these things are just not Warriors basketball. Klay Thompson taking a one-legged three-pointer with 20 seconds on the clock. These things are...
Something's up with that team. I think it's confidence, because they don't look...
Overconfidence,
I don't know what you think, Dwayne.
Sometimes,
they don't look like the Golden State Warriors that we were used to this year.
You know what? I think it was Jalen Rose who brought up the point where... Or maybe Doug Collins on the ESPN halftime show. And somebody brought up a good point where this team loves to perform these kind of plays that are high risk with a low reward. And you bring up the whole one-legged three-pointer by Klay Thompson. They're a very flashy team, and I think sometimes that can get ahead. I mean, you look at Memphis. They're a blue-collar team. You know, they're one of the only team, if not the only team in the league, that still try to play that slow pace. They have their
that
two guys.
Grimy style.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a hard knock.
Throw it into the post to Randolph or Gasol, who have been playing outstanding basketball.
Yep.
I mean, what do you guys think it is? Like, other than just like that, to me, I think it's just overconfidence by sometimes the Golden State. And you know what? Personally, sometimes they're just missing open shots that they usually would make as well. I mean, is there something else that you guys see?
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think Memphis is very, very good. And of course, in the West, they often get lost with all the good teams that come out of it. And also, people forget, this is Golden State's, this is their first time not only facing adversity, but being as high as they've been. There's actually expectations now to go out and win a championship. Whereas they've always been that underdog team that's come in as a lower seed. They play their offense. Now there's expectations. This is Steve Kerr's first run through with this team throughout the playoffs. So we're seeing a lot of the new
methods. That's also important to note.
Right. And their offensive catalysts, you're seeing guys like Steph Curry starting to struggle because the matchups are not in their favor. Klay Thompson starting to struggle. Draymond Green hasn't been Draymond Green. We've seen a quiet series from Bogut. So they're neutralizing these weapons, and they're going to need to figure it out pretty quickly, because as of tonight, this series could be all but over.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. And I want to ask both of you before we jump to NHL, can they turn it around, and do they turn it around and win the series?
I think it's the same thing with the Cavs-Bulls series. I mean, if they win this game, going back to California 2-2, the momentum is in their hands.
Now, if this was me, I'd get called out for putting a cop-out answer out here. I'm just saying.
Well, see, let's be clear. Dwayne just gave an answer. Usually you precurse your answer with 5 minutes of stats. Like I said, I don't need the life story here, babe. Stats from the six. I'm just looking for a prediction. Do they come back and win the series, AK?
I'm saying yes. I think the Golden State Warriors are my pick to go to the NBA Finals.
That's a direct answer, and I appreciate that. I also agree.
You're welcome.
I think they come back, and I think they win the series, but you know
how... Stacey's shaking her head in the corner, by the way.
You know how I feel with predictions. I tend to go down with the ship. Thanks a lot, Nashville Predators. but anyway, I guess I did a little segue for myself dropping the NHL. We should talk a little bit of puck here. Two series have just been extended.
Right.
We have the Montreal Canadiens... Go Habs go, extending their series to game 6 against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
You're terrible,
man. Man, just stop. This is the nature. This is what happens when you live in Toronto for 26 years and you get burned year after year and you cry year after year. All those people that listen to me know how much pain and money this team has cost me.
There's a tissue beside Flip right now.
There's a pool of tears beneath me, and I'm going to slip on the way out of the booth, but... Anyway, the Habs extended the series. Huge game from Carey Price the other night. Also extended the series. The New York Rangers have some life, winning two elimination games to push that series to game 7. I'd like to start with that series. I don't know what you guys think. Sure. We had some off-ice comments made by Alex Ovechkin, pretty much guaranteeing a game 7 victory for
Mark
Washington.
Mark Messier's home.
Wow. Didn't realize that. I know I did read a stat the other day about the Rangers in elimination games. This team is clutch. They don't get rattled. Maybe that's because they have one of the best goalies in their net in Henrik Lundqvist. This has been a tight series, boys. A very, very tight series. And this is just classic, prototypical NHL playoff hockey. And you know what? Game 7 between this Rangers and Capitals team, in my opinion, is going to be a coin flip. You got to give the edge to the Rangers right now with momentum. The Caps are on their heels a bit. I don't know if they can pull it off. I got to go with the Rangers. Either way you slice it, Game 7 is going Wednesday night, I believe. Going to be a great Game 7.
Yeah, I have the Rangers coming through in that game as well. I picked them to win the series. All credit to the Caps. They've really put up a fight here, and they've played a very, very defensive style of hockey.
Barry Trotz hockey.
Have stepped up, absolutely. There's your Nashville connection again.
Thank you.
But no, I think the Rangers are far and away the best team in the Eastern Conference, and now that they have Hank, and he was spectacular, especially in Game 6, down the stretch there, they're getting outshot like crazy. And when you have an X factor like that in your net, a guy that's now showing that he is healthy, there's no signs of that rust that we saw earlier.
And you know what? With that being said, Braden Holtby has really made a name for himself in this series. And without Braden Holtby, in my opinion, this series would already be done.
Yeah.
He's been making some highlight reel saves and really establishing himself as a top-tier goaltender in this league. And I really think Barry Trotz deserves a lot of credit for changing a Washington team that was kind of a run-and-gun style offense to now a defensively responsible team.
You know who else makes very highlight saves?
Mm.
I think his name might be Carey Price.
Well,
Carey
guys,
Price?
Like, come on. I should have a Carey Price tattoo on me somewhere by now.
What's happening right
Wouldn't
now?
Surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me if
he's. But come on, let's be honest here. Carey Price is, I'm going to say he's the best goalie in the league. It's arguable for sure, but the fact that I think he's only 27 years old.
He's the best goalie in the league.
He is so calm. I've never seen the guy get rattled, and for a young guy in Montreal playing goalie, that's impressive on so many levels other than just talent-wise, that having Montreal won two in a row now, that seed of doubt has been planted in Tampa, and it's growing rapidly.
I think there's a very realistic shot they come back and take the series.
I you know what? I'm so excited for Game 6. I really am, because I think these teams are really starting to get that hate on for each other, and that's when NHL playoffs is the best. I don't think we've seen a series so far in this playoffs where the teams have really gotten at each other like now the Tampa Bay Lightning and Montreal Canadiens are. So I'm excited for sure for Game 6, and I hope that there's a Game 7, because if they push it to a Game 7, I'll take Carey Price over Ben Bishop 9, maybe 10 times out of 10.
Who do you have winning the series, Flip?
Obviously, I want Montreal to win. It's tough to come back down 3-0. I'll say Tampa wins the series. I want Montreal to win,
Tampa.
Obviously.
Yeah, I think Tampa wins the series. I think the next game will end it. And just to bring up one little quote.
A tidbit.
John Cooper, the coach, he actually brought up the fact that he doesn't even think that there's much to Carey Price. I don't know exactly what he said, but he kind of called him pedestrian or average. So
I want whatever he's on.
I think you bring it up, Dwayne. I just don't get players, coaches, I don't care who you are, fueling an amazing player on the team you're going against. Why would you give the best player on the other team ammunition? Carey Price is not a type of guy to come out and say anything back, but I guarantee you those comments are in the back of his head from now until puck drop. And just hearing that from you now, I feel sorry for Tampa Bay in Game 6, because I'm going to guarantee Price stands on his head. And that's a low-scoring game. For all you bettors out there,
well, it almost has to be.
Hammer the under tomorrow night in that Montreal-Tampa Bay game. Thank me later.
Best from the six. But you know what? I will say this. In terms of John Cooper, he did the right thing. He said that Carey Price isn't a mental block for the young Lightning team. And I think that's okay.
That's better.
I think that's okay. I don't necessarily agree with the fuel. I think you can go without mentioning him completely.
Yeah. Right.
But obviously with the media, they're going to bring that up. And he stood by his team. He obviously has faith in his team. And this is a good Tampa team. So I do see them winning this series. I think we're in for a great both Western Conference and Eastern Conference finals.
I think, honestly, whoever comes out of the East is going to be in ridiculously tough against the West. Last night we had the Ducks sealing their series against Calgary and
in
moving
overtime,
on to the Western Conference final. So you have arguably the best team in the past decade, the Chicago Blackhawks, going up against probably arguably the second best team.
Big shout out to the Flames, man.
The Flames deserve credit.
A lot of credit.
For sure, because they're an exciting young team and the sky is the limit there. We've talked about the young core.
Right.
You know, they have two amazing young goalies. Defensemen, forwards, Johnny Gaudreau, so
Monahan.
Sean Monahan. So the sky's the limit for them. And, you know, there you go, Calgary, there's your credit due. But Chicago and Anaheim are powerhouses, Western Conference powerhouses, and I feel bad for Montreal or Washington, because whoever comes out of the East and has to go up against one of those two squads is going to be in tough, because both of those Western Conference teams are clicking and they're so deep. Like, look at the lineups on those teams. It's just so impressive.
You know what, though? I will say this. The Eastern Conference this year was a little bit better than the West. So, I mean, there is... We do have
better,
a shot here.
Better how? What do you mean?
Better
like points
in terms
wise?
Of points, yeah. They were better. So, I mean, you have a chance here. The Rangers were no scrub team. They're a team that can legitimately compete with anyone if they do end up making that leap to the finals.
I was just going to say, like, I think Chicago right now is the favorite to win the Cup. And I think that whoever they take on in the East, they'll probably defeat. But I do think that if Anaheim progresses and somehow beats the Hawks, if the Rangers progress through or whoever else, I'm not going to say that would just be a cakewalk for Anaheim. I do think that, you know, the East can definitely put up a fight against Anaheim. I do think that the Blackhawks they're so playoff tested and what they can do. Like you said, Flip, I mean, what they've done over this past decade,
it speaks for itself. You know, rings, absolutely. Cups are cups. And I guess for me, and I've said it multiple times before, in the playoffs it comes down to goaltending. And the one thing that does concern me if I'm the Western Conference teams, as much as Corey Crawford does have a cup, Corey Crawford and Anderson in Anaheim, I tend to think the Eastern Conference goalies have more talent. Ben Bishop, Holtby, Carey Price. You know, these are Henrik Lundqvist. Like, come on. These are solid, perennially good goalies. So
that's a great point.
Either way you slice it, we're in for some interesting storylines to wrap up this Eastern Conference. And then I can't wait for the conference final series, basically. I don't know.
Should be exciting.
It's going to be exciting, and we could talk about the talent all day long. Whoever wins the Cup this year is going to be deserving.
All right, so I guess we'll move on to some baseball now.
Baseball is a good time to talk baseball.
What have you guys thought of the Blue Jays up until now? They're at 500, 16-16. They just lost their last game of the series to the Boston Red Sox, 6-3. Ari Dickey kind of struggled once again. What are you guys' thoughts so far?
Okay, let's hear it, pal.
Yeah, you know, the Jays, they've been exactly what we thought they would be so far this season. We've seen that young pitching struggle. Guys have been sent down.
There's ups
been
and downs.
A little bit of shuffling rotation going down there between AAA. One thing lately we've seen, however, which I think could make a big difference going forward, is a little bit more stability in the pen. Liam Hendricks has established himself as a long man that can give you a few innings. Osuna has fit nicely into that role.
Definitely.
Steve Delabar has looked good. Since coming back up, it's only been a couple of outings, but he's looked good since
raise
coming back.
Raise the bar.
Yeah, raise the bar, Delabar. Very cute picture last year, him and his daughter, and they had the raise the bar hashtag. And Brett Cecil's looked good in the closer's role. So
he settled down for sure.
Yeah, he settled back down ever since he's got back in there. So they have a chance now. They've made up a little bit of ground. A good homestand, a 4-2 homestand, regardless of how it ended. We'll see really what they're made of now as they go on this long road trip. But to them, it's going to be rotation. Can you get 5, 7, 10, 12, 13 of 15. Can you get consecutive hot pitching? Can you get good pitching that gives you not even quality starts, but allows that offense to really take over games? Can you stay in the game instead of falling behind 4-0, 6-0, 6-2, whatever it is early on? And that's what it's going to come down to with this team, because they've shown, even without their regulars in the lineup, they have a high-powered offense.
It's a big ask, I think, personally. The team is clearly built around the long ball and built around an offense that has power up and down the lineup. Before we move on, I think it's important that we shout out Devin Travis for his Rookie of the Month award. This kid has been impressive, man. He's clearly shown that he's ready for the big leagues. It's early in the season, and there's a lot of games left, and a lot can happen. But the fact that Devin Travis has stepped from Double-A right into the starting position at second base and put up the kind of power numbers he has, I think it really bodes well for the future of this team. Obviously, the struggles have been there with the pitching, already having to send down Dan Norris. They just signed Joel Pinheiro, who, you know, when I see signings like that, it scares me. But the team is young, and we knew that there was going to be growing pains, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now. What I think is most key to this team's success, and they've been doing a decent job of it, is putting up W's against the teams in the AL East. We play these teams the most. We see them the most. These are going to be the teams we need to pass to make the playoffs, And as long as the Jays keep putting up W's against the Bo Sox, the Yankees, the Orioles, and these other teams in the East, I think overall they're going to be fine moving forward. And I'd really like to hear what you guys think about that personally.
Yeah, they've struggled against the Rays. I think that's the one team that's really been really hurting
always,
them.
Always struggle.
I don't know what it is about Tampa. It seems like whether they're good or bad, it doesn't matter. I don't think anyone expected to be the to see the Yankees where they are right now, leading the division. I mean, we're still very early, 32 games in into the season, but I don't think the Red Sox will be as bad as they've been. I don't think the Orioles will be as bad as they've been. I think you're going to see a dogfight for the division going forward. And the Jays are right, in my estimation, right where they should be right now. They're really feeling things out. You can't really measure a team until you're about 2 months into the season. So we're getting to that point where you kind of know what you have. You're seeing some pulls and tweaks.
Yeah.
And if they can stay afloat here, I think that, as Jamie Campbell said, as Shai Davidi said, they're going to have the purse strings. Well, they'll be able to open it up and maybe get some pieces in June, in July, when the races are tight, the competition's heated. They just need to stay afloat and see if they can get healthy by then.
And looking forward to that time of year, sorry to cut you off there, Dwayne, I think that the key for them is going to be staying healthy. And as much as, you know, the rotation has kind of had pieces come and go already. The couple of guys that the Jays need to stay healthy are the innings eaters, Dickey, Burley, and now even Aaron Sanchez, who's coming off his best performance
of
his career.
He's been their best starter this year overall, if you look at the performance.
Which
it's
is
been kind of
slightly
crazy.
Scary when you say that, because he's struggled with his command. He's given up the long ball.
Yeah.
So to say that Aaron Sanchez has been the Jays' best starting pitcher so far probably doesn't bode well for the rest of the season. With that being said, it's still very early. They hit a ton of home runs. The power is going to be there year-round. That's not going to be an issue. And you have, you know, they're putting up, I think they average the most runs. They have the highest total runs scored. And they're doing that without their main dude, one of their main dudes. And Encarnacion's hitting like .180.
They're doing it without the man in white in center field.
Which is ridiculous. Yeah, the man in white.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up the rest of the division, Ali, because you look at the Yankees, I think they're 20-12 leading the division.
Wait, I brought up the rest of the division, Dwayne. Give me a shout out, man.
Oh, okay. I'll give you some
Dwayne,
credit.
I'm okay. I'm okay with the credit.
Why are you trying to steal the credit all the time,
I'll take it. Yeah, aren't the Nashville Predators playing down the street in the road hockey tournament?
All right, I'm out, guys. Thanks a lot for the week, and I'm out.
So, I mean, you look at the performance Pineda put up yesterday for the Yankees, 16 strikeouts. They're missing Tanaka, so they're going to eventually get him back. Alex Rodriguez, I mean.
Man, with some pact with the devil, Alex Rodriguez is having an amazing season. Hashtag mafia.
Of course. What show is complete without that?
There's the obligatory mafia drop. Please do not come to my home.
So, and then you also have the Red Sox, who Ali brought up the fact, I mean, they can't struggle like they are right now for this long. I mean, the pitching has been pretty abysmal. The hitting isn't really where it should be. I mean, Hanley Ramirez does come back for them. The Orioles, you figure they get better. I think Alex Cobb, he's season ending for the Rays.
Slob
so,
on my Cobb.
I mean, they'll find some pitching. That's just how they are as well. So it's going to be a dogfight. Ali brought it up. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, the rumor is that Cole Hamels could be moving soon. So who knows? I mean, he could be possibly joining the AL East very soon. So just a matter of which team.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, Dwayne. You're killing it again today. I do think the AL East is his home, a destination for his next home. There's going to be what other teams can really afford. I'm not sure what his numbers are in his contract, but I know he's getting paid triple digits.
He's making cheddar, yes,
yeah,
you can say that.
He's caking. So I do see him coming to the AL East, whether that's with the Jays or not, that remains to be seen. I think that's a tough ask. As much as I'd love to see him in a Toronto uniform, I don't think that's going to happen. Would that help the Jays immensely? Probably.
Oh,
would it help anyone immensely?
Right.
Exactly.
And who's got the most coin? The Yankees. Who needs starting pitching? The Yankees.
Yep.
So yeah. I'd always, you can never put it past the Yankees on grabbing a player, especially a flashy name like Cole Hamels. If I were to pick a team, if he goes anywhere, it would be the Yankees.
They don't call him Cashman for no reason.
Mm. Wow.
Puns from the Six.
Puns from the Six. Stay tuned for the new segment, Bets from the Six. That's going to be happening soon, whether or not my co-hosts like it or not. So stay tuned for that. You guys got any announcements to shout out here?
Since we're on the topic of baseball, I just wanted to bring up the fact that how hot Bryce Harper has been lately. I mean, he had six home runs in three games.
Brass dingers.
I mean,
Yeah, that's impressive. I think he set a record for
The youngest to be able
to hit that many home runs in that in 3 days.
Span, yeah.
So 6 home runs in 3 games is, or 2 days? I don't even know how
six
many.
6 and
it was.
3, and then the last one, he had one in the last game that happened to be a walk-off home run. And I mean, with Bryce Harper, we know that no home run, it's not one of those that just clear the fence. These are ones that are, you know.
They're jacks.
Exactly.
So you're saying this isn't a clown topic, bro?
I think it's a clown topic, but no.
It's because he's not on your fantasy team, Flip.
Wasn't I supposed to leave the booth already? Like, you guys are tripping me aggressively today.
Weren't you trying to get Devin Travis off me, like, about a few minutes ago?
And on that note, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in, as always. And on a serious note, we do very much appreciate the support. Thank you for always listening. Please continue to listen. Give that feedback. Follow on Twitter. Like up the Facebook page. We very much appreciate the support. On behalf of my esteemed co-hosts, Dwayne Turner, Ali Khan, I love Devin Travis, Ravjani, and myself, Flip Livingstone, signing out.
Thanks, guys.